All right. Good morning, everyone. First of all, I want to thank you for joining us this morning for this Developer Foundational Session, also known as the session with probably one of the longest titles ever. Apologize for that. So my name is Jay Schmelzer. I'm one of the directors of program management on the Visual Studio team at Microsoft. And what we want to do over the next hour is really, you know, the goal or sort of the purpose of this session is to, as the name implies, lay the foundation for the rest of the developer content that'll be available this week. So we'll go through. I promise to try to spend as much time as possible doing some actual demos and go through slides very quickly in between just to set the stage. Our goal here is really, you know, I'll be honest, you're not going to walk out of here knowing exactly how to do all the things that I showed you. It's more a matter of just getting some thoughts going, getting you familiar with the breadth of some of the content available this week so you can figure out where you want to spend the rest of your time over the course of the next 3 or 4 days getting deeper and learning more about what we're doing. So to start, let me just kind of frame up a little bit of what we're hearing, what's motivating us in the Visual Studio team and as relates to developer tools at Microsoft. We have the opportunity to go out and engage with and talk to a number of developers around the world. And really, we hear a core set of themes that come out every time we talk to folks. A lot of it comes down to, you know, the notion that every organization, every company is becoming more and more of a software company. That means as developers, our roles are becoming even more important to the success of the organization. Any organization today that is not taking advantage of software as a core way of driving their business and taking advantage of key opportunities that come up is just going to fall by the wayside and not be as successful. Of course, with that move to being a more core part of the business and more important to the success of the business, that means that we're being asked to innovate and deliver on a much more rapid cadence as developers. And as you saw this morning in the keynote with Jason and Joe and others, the proliferation of devices out there means that people are asking for this software to be available on different types of devices. So we need, as developers, to be able to build software that allows us to run our business and available on multiple different devices and different device form factors. We have to be able to work at a global scale because of the connectivity of these kinds of devices, the presence of web-based technologies. But of course, we can't forget that we've also got existing systems that you need to continue to maintain, you need to continue to evolve, and that run core parts of your business. So kind of sums it up as do more, do it faster, but keep everything else running, right? So it's an exciting time, but can be a little bit of a daunting time. I think about the strategy that most organizations I talk to are imploring. It's really a matter of looking at those core business applications you have today and thinking about how you're going to evolve them into this new area. In one sense, it's evolving them into the world of devices, being able to optimize for specific devices, being able to work across multiple form factors and different device types, and coming up with a strategy for how you're going to think about your application portfolio there. It's about being able to deliver more quickly, faster time to market through developer agility, and then, of course, taking advantage of the cloud to scale to the cloud, to have the global presence, to take advantage of capabilities that you saw in the keynote this morning around easier mechanisms for fault tolerance, failover, redundancy through this cloud infrastructure. Of course, thinking about those hybrid cloud environments where you need to keep a chunk of your data or a lot of your data on-premise, but use the cloud as that scale factor or that burst capability. So let's first talk a little bit about the web. One of the things that we all know is the web is increasingly being driven by standards. HTML5, CSS3, all standards that are evolving and really the basis for ability to develop a rich set of applications. The approach or the trends that we see in the consumerization of software has really caused the end users of applications to just increase their expectations of the quality and experience they're going to get from every piece of software they work with. So even in the web-based space, they're expecting these rich interactive experiences. They expect things to work in modern browsers, have reactive UI so that as you move from different device form factors, the UI can adjust and work accordingly. And of course, thinking about the cloud and that increased complexity of being able to go and expose and make available certain aspects of this business data to those devices that are not likely connected to your corporate network, and giving you the ability to extend the reach of those line of business applications through a hybrid cloud. So with that, we didn't do too bad. We're about, you know, five or so minutes in, and we're already going to get to our first demo. So with that, let's switch over here to my Visual Studio Machine and talk a little bit about what these standards mean to us as web developers. What I have here is a fairly involved solution. It's a broad suite of applications that we're going to use through a big chunk of the demos today. And the first one is around this My Visitors or My Company's Visitors site. And what we want to do is go look at this browser-based experience for understanding who's coming to visit individuals in the organization. Now, inside Visual Studio, one of the first things we notice is that in addition to the standards, we also realize that there is not one browser that is the dominant one anymore. There's multiple different types of browsers. And so what we've done is taught Visual Studio how to work with these different browsers and use them as part of the core development experience. So in this case, I can just go through here and choose which browser I want to be my default. Or if I want to instead, what I can do is use the Browse With option, and I can decide to go ahead and start working with a development session using multiple browsers at once. So in this case, I'll select both Chrome and Internet Explorer. I'll click Browse. And what we're going to see is Visual Studio is going to go and it's going to launch both browser instances. It's going to launch one with Internet Explorer up here. We'll size that up a little bit. And then down here, we've got Chrome working on that same site. If I just snap this over a little bit real quick, you can see that if we look at the application, you see we've got our list of people that are going to come and visit or have visited us. You know, if I change the size of the browser, you know, you see that the UI responds pretty well to what I need to do there. Let's go shrink that back up. Now, one of the things that we've done inside Visual Studio is you see we now have this new option, this new button over here next to the launch. It's called Browser Link. And what Browser Link does is allows us to establish a signal R connection between Visual Studio and the browsers running. So in this case, Visual Studio sees that there's two instances of browsers attached to the session right now. What that allows me to do is actually do a couple fun things. I can come over here and I can use the inspect button. Well, actually, let's first go to a different page. Let's go navigate to the frequently asked questions page. If I come down here and I use the inspect option, just by going through, all right, let's get Visual Studio a different spot. Boom. What you'll see is as I'm navigating through in the browser, we're being taken to that location in the source code where that markup was delivered from. And what I could do is I could just now go over here to Visual Studio. Oops. Well, get back to my. Let's go back over here again. Let's go back and inspect, search, go back over here to Visual Studio, and I could go make a change, save that change, and when I hit the Browser Link button, Visual Studio will push those changes out to the attached browser instances. No, really, it will. There we go. And so we see it's immediately changed the markup in those two places of the browser. But wait, we can do even better than that. If we come over here back to, let's go just make this a little bit bigger so I have some more room. If we come down and hit the design option, now I can do the same thing, but rather than going into Visual Studio making the change, I'll make the change right here inside of Internet Explorer, and you see that the code in Visual Studio is changing at the same time. So we have SignalR allowing us to have this communication between the browser and Visual Studio and real-time updates, as well as refreshing and interacting with multiple instances of different browsers all at the same time while I'm going through and debugging my site. So that's pretty cool. Let's go close this version. Close that as well. So that's a little bit about Browser Link and the ability to leverage things like SignalR to establish the communication. Now, this doesn't require any plugins to be installed in those browser instances. It's just an in-process communication mechanism. Now, we talk a little bit about the cloud. The thing that we can do and the thing that we've included in Visual Studio is the ability to take advantage of cloud resources right from within the development environment. So I could go into my project here, I could right click and I could say publish. And what we're going to bring up is a set of options for where I want to publish my site. Whoa, hello. Once Visual Studio starts responding again. There we go. And if we go up here, we can see that we can publish the file system, but we can also publish right from here into Windows Azure sites. And you know, I'm signed in, so I can go and I can pick from the list of available websites that I've already created inside of Windows Azure. Or if I need a new one, I can just go right over here and create a new website right away, specify the basic information for it, and push my changes directly up to there. Now, I've already done that, and we're going to use this site a couple more times for our demos, so we'll go ahead and close out of this. But it doesn't stop there. The other thing that we're able to do is, because Visual Studio now understands your subscriptions, understands the resources you're connected to, we can go into the Azure Explorer here, and we can start exploring what resources I have available. So in this case, what we'll do is I have multiple subscriptions, so I'm going to go and just filter these down a little bit. We'll just use my demo subscription here. That will filter the contents of the Explorer. Still a lot of things in here. But if I go down and explore, we can go and we can look at and start exploring right from within Visual Studio the content of my Azure website. This is going to go, we'll use the Azure APIs to enumerate all the files and so forth that are part of this site. And from here, we can go and start interacting with that site right from within Visual Studio. We could grab log files. Maybe we need to make a configuration change, so we could go in and open web config right from within Visual Studio off the Azure site, make our changes, and save it back up into the site. So great interaction, allowing you to stay in place in your development environment, not have to switch around between Visual Studio and the Azure portal and things like that. Really trying to go and ensure that your core developer scenarios stay within your Visual Studio experience. Okay, so that's just a very little bit about kind of some of the things we're doing inside of Visual Studio as it relates to web development, and how we can have Visual Studio start taking advantage of some of these open web standards to create a richer experience, but also interact with the broader cloud development environment. We mentioned devices. Devices are very common. Devices are the thing. Pretty much every organization I talk to has mobile as a top initiative for the development staff over the next kind of 6 to 12 months. And the reality of the situation is it's not just one device that people are working with. We think about this from the perspective of where we're coming as application developers. We really tend to come at this from two different points of view. On one side, we have folks that have been building rich native experiences using Windows desktop technologies like WPF, or creating new Windows 8 store applications using .NET and creating this rich native experience. We want to be able to extend those into multiple different device factors, non-Windows devices. And we enable that through our strong partnership with Xamarin to allow you to take those C# and .NET development skills and apply them to non-Microsoft devices, iOS and Android, while still allowing you to have tremendous reuse of your code assets. Today, when you're trying to reach a breadth of devices, you typically are doing that through browser-based web applications using HTML and JavaScript. We want to enable you to extend those into multi-device capabilities as well, more near-native device experiences through the integration work we're doing with Apache Cordova inside the Visual Studio experience. So whether you're coming from a core .NET, rich desktop, Windows-based experience trying to go into device, or you're coming from a breadth web experience into device, Visual Studio provides a mechanism for both to achieve your goals there. So let's go a little bit deeper and talk a little bit about sort of the Windows devices first. Joe mentioned this morning in his keynote, the idea of creating an experience across a single experience that is available across multiple different device types, device form factors in the Windows family. We do that through what we refer to as universal Windows apps, allowing us to create a single core experience that can run across different device factors, different form factors, different things, from an embedded device all the way up to an Xbox or Perceptive Pixel type big screen display. Now, it's not really, sure you can write an app that's going to run anywhere, And we have good experiences for doing some adaptive or reactive UI in those cases. But really what it's about is allowing you to share as much of the core logic as possible and giving you the ability to create rich experiences for each device as appropriate or as required by your application. In addition to that, something that we started previewing back in the spring, what we call .NET Native. So for Windows Store apps, or starting with Windows Store apps, I should say, really allowing you to take that high developer productivity you get with C# and .NET and still get the rich, powerful, native performance of a C++ application. So I'll show you a little bit of this, but what we've done is essentially taken the compiler toolchain for C#, and in the case of .NET Native, we plug in the back-end C++ compiler so that you're getting C++ output in C++ native code images, even though you develop using C# and .NET. As far as what happens with .NET Native, one of the things that it does, it really allows us to have some really impressive startup performance wins over just straight managed code. So this is Ordament, an app that's in the store today that was developed using .NET Native. And you can see some of the wins they get from startup time, as well as what they get from memory usage, because we're not loading in the entire framework. We're only static linking in the pieces that you actually use as part of your application. That's a lot of words, and I think I said most of them already. So let's skip that and instead go over to a demo. OK, so in this case, I've got a different part of my solution loaded up here. And what we've got is this solution is now focused on our client apps. And what you see here is we've got a set of universal apps. Let me go bring this out a little bit so you can see exactly what we're looking at here. So you see that what we have is a Windows universal app for the store and one for the phone. And then I have a set of shared code across those Windows implementations that allows me to get a lot of code reuse between the two. Because what we've done, if you look at this, if I expand this down a little bit, you'll see that the view models, the models themselves, even some of the views are shared between those two different apps. And then all I need to do is go in and where I need unique to the device experiences, create a different view on top of those models and view models to go actually give myself a rich experience for the phone or the Windows Store app. So let's first just go ahead and run this and see what we've got as far as the applications. So you see we're going to launch both our we don't need the browser version, but we get the same application, one running in the kind of store emulator and one running in the phone emulator. And the phone emulator is way bigger than the slate. But you'll see it's the same application, and it's just working with slightly different views optimized for those experiences. So if I go in here and select a guest, you know, we can see a very similar kind of experience between the two. This allows us, this application allows us to go and maybe change the picture, in which case the emulator is going to interact with my native device, right? So now we can make Mitra really mad and I could take a picture of myself if I wanted to, but you guys don't want to see that. And we could go save that change and it would replicate across all the different device form factors that we're running because it's the same code, it's the same app talking in the back end from the models and so forth. So let's go ahead and stop that. Let's dive a little bit deeper into what some of these changes were with the views. So if we go in and look, you know, the main page that we were looking at there, if we look at it, sort of if we load it up for the store app, let me move this back over so you can see. You know, we see that we've got just a slightly different design layout scheme applied to the store app versus the phone app, right? And that's all it is. It's just the view that we've changed. The view models, the models under these covers are all still the same and shared across those two implementations. I mentioned the .NET Native capability. Let's go just take a look at the experience there and how you get into that. So in order to work with .NET Native, we simply go in and we right-click on a project, and we can see this option to enable for .NET Native. Now, this is a fairly impactful change. It goes and changes the tool chain on us. But what it does is it's going to hook up that new compiler flow. So now that rather than just creating IL, we will also then run that through a tool chain that ultimately ends up through the C++ compiler and into a native image on disk. It means no more NGen. Means, you know, big chunks of JIT are gone. All those things that cause startup performance, or for some people that you think your machine is taking off in the middle of the night because it's NGening everything again and creating those native images, those things all go away. It also gives us the ability to actually have a more side-by-side capability for your device apps. Because we're static linking in the parts of the framework you use, we can actually have different apps on the machine use different versions of the framework and still run great side-by-side. Again, just an intro into some of those things. We'll go into a lot more detail in other sessions throughout the week. So that was a little bit of a look at the concept of a Windows Universal or Universal Windows app and the ability to share code there. The other piece would be then, let's go extend that and let's take those experiences to non-Windows devices. Turns out, people carry a lot of non-Windows devices. Who knew? But you know, iOS, Android are certainly very common, very popular requests that we hear business applications developers needing to go create applications for. And through our partnership with Xamarin, we bring your C# and .NET skills into the iOS and Android environment. We allow you to build native iOS and Android applications, but still leverage a lot of your core C# and .NET skills, allow you to share code across a Windows, iOS, and Android implementation using these tool sets. Essentially, it works very similar to what we do in the .NET world on Windows. We have a set of projections for the iOS and Android APIs, so you can write native iOS, native Android code just using C# as your language and syntax. So let's take a look at what that looks like. And to do that, we're going to go over here to my Mac. And here you see we've got that same solution kind of loaded up. The only difference this time is I've also got the iOS and Android projects loaded into the solution. So what I can do is I'm just going ahead and hit run here. And we will start up. Let's try that again. Let's do a quick little rebuild. Sweet. Lovely. Well, you get the idea. Fortunately, there'll be more sessions on this week, so you can have an opportunity to see it again. One of the key things, though, you'll notice I've got this project down here called Portable. If I right-click on that and look at the properties, let's go ahead and hit change so we bring this up. What this is this is a portable class library. It's a project type that allows us to go and compile one library, one binary, and have it run in multiple different platforms. And you see, because I'm running inside Visual Studio with the Xamarin extensions included, we can specify that we want this to not only work on the universe of Windows kind of devices, but also on Android and iOS as well. So we have one binary that's running on all of those different platforms and runtime environments. The other thing I'll show you, we get into, if I go and look at sort of the experience here, you'll see that for the iOS app, we have a native kind of getting started sort of entry point. If I go up to the Android app and look at the main activity.cs, you'll see again, this is doing the same thing. This is just the Android API way of getting that app started. Rich experience, you get everything you'd expect inside of Visual Studio. So if I come in here and do base dot, we have the full rich IntelliSense statement completion, all the things that you would expect from your Visual Studio and C# experience, even when you're working against Android and iOS, including periodic build failures. Okay. Oh, what the heck. Let's see if this thing's going to work. So If it didn't work in the app, let's see if it actually works on the device. So I've got an iPhone over here. I've got that app deployed. I'm going to go out. This will go and call that web service that we'd created. And that whole funky, yeah, I have stuff. No, I don't. Let's do a couple of switches. All right. Apparently, the iOS stuff does not like me. Guess what you get as a Microsoft guy trying to show iOS, right? Oops, wrong. OK, so we've talked a little bit about kind of how we think about cross-device from a native application standpoint. So when I think about what you would choose there are a couple motivations for why you would choose one of these technologies over the other. In the case of the Xamarin technology, a lot of that has to do with the requirements of the application and the skill set of the development team, right? So if you need the native experiences, you need, you want an app that feels like it was written for iOS, it was written for Android, it was written for Windows, and you're a C-sharp development shop, then the Xamarin experience is going to feel really good for you. On the other side, if you're coming for, and your application needs is more broad reach, you want to get an experience of write it once and run it everywhere, but you still need near native capabilities. Like you want to interact with the device, you want to interact with the camera, for example, and you have a web technology background, then the Cordova solution inside of Visual Studio is going to give you a great experience for that. It's going to allow you to build these hybrid HTML apps that are device apps, and they have near-native capabilities in the sense that they aren't actually native apps, but they have, through plug-in technologies, the ability to get at and interact with device-specific capabilities that you would find in these applications. So let's take a little look at what that experience might look like. So again, switched over to Visual Studio. Now, in this case, I have a project already loaded, but let's go create another version of Visual Studio. And I'll just show you what this looks like kind of in a blank. So when we go into Visual Studio, if I go down here into the JavaScript area, we see we have a new blank Apache Cordova app type. We can create that. And we're going to see is we're going to get the shell or the starting point of a multi-device hybrid app. We can do this with straight JavaScript. We can do this pulling in TypeScript. So if you want a little bit more kind of type-safe experience or a richer developer experience, or if you're a C-sharp dev and pull your hair out when you try to write a lot of JavaScript code, TypeScript will give you a much more familiar experience for authoring your JavaScript, but still compiles down to just straight JavaScript in the end. And see, we have basically what you would expect from that kind of JavaScript experience. One of the things we've done is inside of the config.xml, if we go up and look at the plugins tab, we can see all the various plugins from the Apache Cordova project that are available to us that we can pull into our application and give us access to those native device capabilities, whether it's geolocation, file system, and so forth. Now, this is just, at the core, it's HTML and JavaScript that we're working with. So in this case, in this example application here, we're also using Angular, very popular JavaScript framework, as part of the core application and giving us kind of that view model layer and those kinds of things that we expect as JavaScript developers. Again, from within Visual Studio, I can go ahead and run this. We can run it in an emulator like Ripple. We could run it right against the device if we want to as well. Now, in this case, let's switch back over here and take a look at, we don't need you. That was kind of fun to do. All right, so let's look at this this app over here. So here we have sort of our parking reservations app. So this would be an app that someone could use if they're going to come and visit us and they want to register their car. They can see the various reservations. We can go in. Let's create a new reservation. We can interact with things like the camera. So if I want to take a picture, all right, you guys all get to get famous right now. Ooh, That was pretty blurry. Oh, well. Perfect. Save that. Eh, a little sideways, but it's okay. And our license plate. Good enough. Start date. Woo. Start time. Person's coming in at a strange hour of the day, but that's okay. Yeah, so they're only there. Set. Save. And there we go. There's our new reservation. Lovely. And we can delete it so that you guys, because I know you guys didn't sign the approval to have your picture used, so we'll just delete that. But you get the idea. You've got an experience that works and feels good and across this device, but still has the ability to interact with the capabilities of the device that you normally can't get from just a browser-based application running on a device, such as interacting with the camera and so forth. Okay, so at this point, we've talked about a little bit of the web and how standards are allowing us to create richer development experiences through things like BrowserLink and taking advantage of things like SignalR. We've talked about the cloud a bit and how with Visual Studio, we're trying to create an experience that allows you as a developer to take advantage of cloud scale resources and cloud capabilities that you need on a day-to-day basis while building your applications without actually leaving the Visual Studio experience and having to switch around between different environments. We talked a little bit about device apps, the concept of a Windows Universal app, and how to create an experience that allows us to maximize the amount of code we share across device-specific implementations, focusing on just providing the view capability we need for the different form factors. And we've seen how we can extend that into iOS and Android native applications using Xamarin and still getting code sharing capability. And we wrapped it up by seeing a little bit of what we can do with cross-platform hybrid apps leveraging the Apache Cordova work. So now let's change gears a little bit and talk about the next thing that we need to do often as developers, and that is connect with a rich and interesting set of services. So one of the things that we'll do is to specifically do that, let's drill in a little bit to the Office 365 API set. If we look at what kind of the world looks like today from an Office development standpoint, we're seeing and we've seen how Office is extending its reach beyond the Windows desktop experience or the desktop browser-based experience. We have the release of the Office apps for iPad, which actually have had over 35 million downloads from the store of those Office apps on iPad. So that's a tremendous amount of reach in different places that we can go with our applications. And we needed the ability for developers to be able to extend those experiences and have them work regardless of whether the person is using, you know, Word on a Windows desktop device, Word in a browser, or Word on an iPad. We also wanted to make sure, and earlier this year, we started opening up a set of the core services that are part of the Office 365 kind of experience and platform so the developers can go and take advantage of those and interact with them. So specifically in the spring, we opened up the users and groups so you could get at your Active Directory users and groups from within non-Office applications and kind of leverage that and extend those experiences. And at the time, we also delivered a preview of a set of kind of SDKs that allowed you to use that from .NET, from HTML and JavaScript, as well as, you know, deploying into the Azure environment. So recently we've extended this experience. We're continuing to grow. And one of the first things that was introduced just recently, I believe it was just last week actually, this got pushed into production environments, was the My Apps section of Office 365. And what we'll see here in a minute through a demo is this allows us as application developers to extend the experience of our existing browser-based applications, have them show up as part of the user's Office 365 experience. Allow them to show up in the My Apps, allow them to pin them on their start page, have single sign-on flows between them, all from just an existing kind of ASP.NET MVC kind of application, allowing it to reach into additional places. Just today, actually, or maybe a couple hours ago, really, we GA'd the first set of services from Office 365 that we've exposed for application use outside of just core traditional Office development. So users, groups, files in SharePoint and OneDrive for Business, as well as, you know, information from Exchange, including mail, context, and calendar information. Then we're also staying true to the multi-device world and the multi-device priority extended the set of SDKs and experiences that we have for developers to not only the Microsoft technology like .NET or leveraging HTML and JavaScript, but also through Xamarin, through Apache, through Android or iOS as well. So keeping with our theme, I'm going to invite Jeremy to give us a look at how some of these experiences.
Great. Thanks, Jay.
Thanks.
So as Jay mentioned, there's been quite a few announcements as of today and last week with the app launcher. For those of you that already have Office 365 and you've triggered the first release toggle inside your administration console, you'll start to see these features I'm about to show roll out into your tenants. So definitely go and check those things out. If we just switch over to my demo environment here, you'll be able to see that this is the new My Apps page. And the way that this is working is if any of you in the audience are already kind of an ASP.NET MVC developer that's maybe built single sign-on applications using Azure Active Directory, these apps will actually appear in your My Apps page so that your end users can then, from one single place, launch all of your business applications. Or if you're an ISV, third-party developer, you can also build these things, and eventually we'll be able to have them through the Office Store. You'll be able to purchase and see these things available in your My Apps page. So one of the nice things is here is I have a property manager app, which we've actually open sourced, and it'll be available on dev.office.com/code-samples. And what I can do is I can click in here, and I can actually pin that app to my app launcher. And what the app launcher is no matter where I am in the experience, if I kind of launch, maybe I'm in Oa, where your users may be right now, when they come over here to the app launcher here, you'll be able to see that we can actually jump in to all the other applications we have available in the suite. So for instance, if I click and launch the property manager here, what that would do is launch my application with one click directly into and be signed in as my user as it stood. And in this example here, what we're doing is we're doing a bit of property management, where we have inspectors that go out on properties, they take photos of any instance that may have occurred, and then repairers will actually go in, take photos to prove they've made the repair, and submit those things through. Now, the benefit not just of the My Apps page is the underlying platform that Office 365 provides. So for instance, when I think about those APIs that we announced, the mail, calendar contacts, and the files API, I can start to leverage storing my data inside that Office 365 platform and leverage my existing skills I have as an ASP.NET MVC developer. So for instance, when I come in here for my inspections, I can see I have a few to repair. Now this is under the covers using SharePoint lists. And those lists inside SharePoint, inside a site, have actually got workflows enabled in them. So we can actually go through here now and say that this particular inspection was not scheduled. And I can click and open up that load schedule page. And what that's going to do is bring me up a form with a few of my photos of the inspection was taken place by that manager. Now, as Jay mentioned before, this is using all of the out-of-the-box Visual Studio technology here within this browser with MVC. So you can see here that I've got a few photos pulled through. Now, I know some of you guys from Europe are a bit party animals. And if any of you have seen The Hangover, or you've seen some of the things that happen to the hotel rooms, I would strongly encourage you not to wreck your hotel rooms today or for the rest of the remainder of the week. But you can see that these guys got up a lot of mischief in Vegas. Now, if I get through here and kick those things off, I can assign that to Ron. This is actually pulling directly from the calendar. Ron's clearly not very busy today, but it's pulled through the available slots inside that calendar directly using those APIs that are available as of today in general availability. And I'm going to click there and schedule that repair. Now, while it's doing that, I'm going to jump over to Visual Studio and just show you what that's actually doing. So all of this code is using just standard .NET, the IntelliSense that you're used to when you're using various different APIs. But if you already have an existing ASP.NET MVC app already wired up against Azure AD, it's very easy to go and grab these libraries from NuGet. So I can come over and right-click and go Add, Connected Service. And what that's going to do right now is we only have the Office 365 Connected Service in here. You'll see that I'm already signed in with my admin account here because I'm in my developer tenant. And what I can do is I can register this app. So this existing ASP.NET MVC app now is going to be registered. And what it's going to do is going to pull back from my Azure Active Directory services the available services that I can call within my MVC application. So in this instance, I have calendar, contacts, mail, my files, sites, users, and groups, of which all have come out of preview overnight and are generally available, as well as this tooling that's available to download from the website. So if I went in here and I said that I wanted to make sure my application had permissions to use my files of edit and delete and read, and I also wanted to make sure I could pull information from my Active Directory in here, and I wanted to enable single sign-on from my org. All those things are easily kind of configured in here within this dialog box. And once I click OK, what that's actually going to do is wire that through. It's going to load up some documentation to help me with some of the code snippets that I've got going to get me started with the various different bits and pieces inside maybe wiring up a calendar. But you'll see here that we get these simple Exchange clients or SharePoint client objects. So I can go in and go client.me, and I'm using events right now. But as you'll see, we actually have the ability to kind of go into the shared calendars with an individual user, as well as things such as looking inside their inbox in their mail or their sent items. Or, for instance, a very common usage here would be to actually go through to send mail. Sorry. I'm in the wrong thing. So you can see here that inside here, the messages.addMessageAsync is going to allow me to send an email, but it's going to be on behalf of that logged in user. So whenever I'm logged into the ASP.NET MVC app and my app's going to send an email, it's going to do it based on if I was inside Aurora and my Outlook client sending a mail on behalf of that user. So that's really showing that experience of how easy it is to connect with Visual Studio to those services, download those NuGet packages. We're actually being pulled through here. So if I right click and go manage NuGet packages, you'll see here that all of those Microsoft Office 365 NuGets are coming down with all the latest DLLs, and you can go and update those DLLs as we add additional services into Office 365 and push those additional endpoints directly into that code. So this experience isn't just for ASP.NET MVC. As Jay mentioned, this is also available for Cordova and Xamarin. So for instance, if I was building a multi-device application, I could also go away and build those connected to Android and iPad directly inside Visual Studio. Now, in addition to those native experiences we have inside Visual Studio, what we also have, if I cut over to my OS X desktop there, is we have announced today open sourcing of the SDKs for both Android and iOS. So in this scenario, this iPad app here is actually connecting straight through to that application. And where I had that repair suggested there, as my logged in user here, I can actually click in and see that repair. It's going to load the comments that the inspector made about the photo, such as the fact that the room was wrecked. But I can also interact back as well as doing the read. So I can come in here and I can select a photo, and I'm in the emulator, so what that's going to do is actually pick one from my camera roll here. So I'm just going to select that photo. And what that will do is Apple clearly doesn't like us today. It would actually allow us to then submit those comments through. I can say I fixed the wrecked room. I could click done there, and that would save that. I think my Mac's lost the internet connection. And then the other aspect here is I can actually finalize that repair. Now, directly from that screen, what that's actually going to do is trigger a SharePoint workflow on my SharePoint list. So if I jump back over to my SharePoint site now, all of that plumbing, that data storage, is all being done directly inside a SharePoint site. So all the goodness you get of having metadata, workflow, versioning, the content types that you had as a SharePoint developer is now very easily exposed within these APIs, which can also be called directly using the RESTful API. They don't have to go through the SDKs we've built. As an example of that, if we go over to dev.office.com in the documentation section now, and I go over to the Office 365 RESTful APIs, when I go over to, say, for instance, to get messages, all of our documentation shows the raw RESTful endpoints. So if you are building maybe just directly against the endpoints, maybe you're using PHP and we don't have the SDKs out just yet, you can actually see all these raw endpoints here. But the nice part is I can actually click try on these endpoints. And what that's actually going to do is return me sample documentation. If I just zoom in here, so make sure it's nice and large, it'll show me the sample JSON messages that we're getting back. So you've got a nice idea about the structure that's available, and you can test those things directly from inside the documentation that's available inside MSDN, which is a really new thing for us that we've just launched today as well. So please go and check that out. I'll take the applause from the other room as well. So in terms of that, the other things that we've released today, if I go to dev.office.com, is we've provided a bunch of training. So with the release of these new APIs, if you go over to the training section of the site, underneath resources, we've got over 30 hours of training here with hands-on labs that you can go and take. So if you are readily new to Office 365, you'll be able to come in here and get started at either a 100, a 200, or 300 level. Now, we do have a lot of other resources available to us on dev.office.com, which I'd encourage you guys to check out. Also, we have the booth over in the expo hall, where we have a lot of our engineers actually in town. So if you do have questions around these APIs or maybe the app model that we launched a while ago, please come and see us in the expo hall. We also have a kickoff session to go where we'll go a lot deeper into all of this stuff at 1:30, which is right over by the registration in 80 in room J. So please go and check that out as well. So with that, I'll hand back to hand back to Jay.
Thank you. Now, there is one little thing I'm going to do, just because. So you saw how we've really gone and we've invested in the experience for developers to explore and kind of understand the APIs that we're making available through better documentation, through a little bit of an experience for trying and seeing responses come back and forth. We've taken it one step farther, and we have an early preview that's available today. For some of these messages, like, for example, getting messages, we see the C# code here. I can click over, and I can see the JavaScript equivalent of that. And in this case, I have a button that says open. When I click open, this is going to take us into an API sandbox. That now we have an interactive experience in the browser for exploring even deeper this API set. So I can go over here, and I can just go ahead and click run. And we're going to really tempt the demo gods right now and see if this actually works for us or not. But what we're doing is we're running against a sandbox service implementation. So I didn't have to sign up for anything related to Office 365 or developer accounts. I can just come right in and start exploring and experiencing this API and hopefully get a response back here. First one does seem to take a minute or so. Oh, come on. You can do it. You can do it. Hey, it did it. So yes, we got responses. Now, in case it wasn't obvious, this is a fully interactive experience, right? So I can go sent items, for example, and try to run that and see what comes back and actually get it right. And see what comes back. So you see now we've got three messages there. You know, it's just using that same editing experience that we made available as part of the Visual Studio Online capability. So you have a bit of an IntelliSense experience. You can start really exploring some of these APIs right from within the browser before you go in and have to go pull it into the tool of your choice, whether that's Visual Studio or Xcode or whatever. So anyway, just a little bonus demo for you since I failed one. But it's kind of as Jeremy was saying, you know, going forward, the plan is to continue taking these experiences to the breadth of the Office products and the Office experiences so that as a developer, we can start building experiences that either take advantage of the underlying services from the Office 365 API, as well as surfacing our applications through those Office products as endpoints. I've been working with kind of Office development for a number of years, and I will have to say that one of the things that's really exciting for me about the investments that have happened over the last couple of years is that we're really moving away from Office development as kind of a career decision you felt like you had to make. When you went down the Office development path, things were always just a little different. You had different kind of API, you had different kinds of, you know, stuff. You did SharePoint development, it was ASP.NET, just not quite like normal ASP.NET. Now what we're doing is kind of turning that around and just making all those services available to any application type as just services available to that application technology. So MVC5, Universal Apps, whatever you're working on. Okay, so from this point, And of course, one of the things that you can talk about, you can go learn more about all the different partners that are launching products into this experience with us, or launching their products into this experience. So to this point, everything we've shown you, you can go off and you can do today. They're all available through GA services or updates to Visual Studio. We'll shift gears and talk a little bit about kind of the future of web development, and kind of where we're going with sort of .NET in general and .NET vNext. So if you think about .NET today, regardless of what you're doing, you're programming against the same core full framework stack and full runtime stack. It turns out that we've got different needs for different types of applications. So in the client space, you know, we have the rich desktop applications, we have store applications. In the web, we have, you know, the browser-based technologies like MVC, SignalR, and so forth. And what we're starting to do is think about the framework and the application development stack in offering more specialized ways of interacting with just what you need for the application type you're creating. So in the case of the client apps, you saw the example of the .NET native, so the ability to go and create smaller packages, native images, just pulling in what you need for doing those device kinds of things, as well as taking that into a cross-device capability. On the server side, we're doing something similar, creating an experience where you can have an optimized experience in .NET for developing cloud-based applications, cloud-scale applications with high throughput demands, big scalability, small footprint, side-by-side, those kinds of capabilities, as well as thinking about that from a cross-platform capability as well. And underneath, we have a common set of investments that we make that apply to every .NET developer, so things like our next generation JIT, the Roslyn project of the new .NET compiler platform that allows us to open up the intimate knowledge the compiler has of your source code and make it available to tools and IDE experiences, as well as continuing our investments in the base class libraries and specifically looking at more and more investments in portable class libraries so you can create those binaries that can run across different device factors. And of course, doing it all in an open way. And back in the spring, we created the .NET Foundation as a place for us to do and engage in open source development related to .NET with the community. Roslyn was one of the first kind of marquee projects from us that went in there. We took the next version of ASP.NET in there as well. You'll see us continue to make investments and continue to be more open with the way we develop .NET in the future. Turning specifically to ASP.NET and the investments for the next version of ASP.NET, it really comes around ensuring that we're creating an experience that allows you to be optimized for the workload, for the experience you want. So it's things like ensuring that it's modular. You pull in only the capabilities you need as opposed to pulling in all of the ASP.NET stack just for every application. Ensuring that we're seamlessly allowing you to work and take advantage of these cloud scale opportunities so that an application you run on-premise will naturally scale and execute in the cloud environment. Of course, all of it is being done open source with contributions. And I'd say on the other side, a lot of it is about really thinking about how we develop the ASP.NET stack in a way that it's accessible to every developer, regardless of tool set. What that means is we can go in and just use editors, just text editors, and be successful building ASP.NET applications in the future, allowing us to spend even more time thinking about how we create really productive experiences in Visual Studio for doing the same thing. And of course, we need it to be fast. We wanted to think about these cloud scale solutions so that we can run higher density server environments for Azure and for our hosting partners and for you and your on-premise environments, but also higher throughput of the applications you're developing themselves. So that, let's switch over and take a quick look at a demo here. So here I actually did two environment changes. I'm running the latest version of the next version of Visual Studio, so Visual Studio 14, the latest technology preview. And just for fun, I decided to go ahead and do it on Windows 10 as well, because why have anything be stable in a demo environment, right? So let's go in and let's go create a new project. And what we'll do is we'll create a new ASP.NET vNext web application. And a couple things you'll notice as this gets created. First, it did create quite a bit faster than ASP.NET projects get created today. And part of that is just because we're not pulling in everything. We're only pulling in a subset of the libraries and the components. To see what that looks like, we go over here into our project, you can see that what we've done is we've really rethought the way we think about references and pulling things in. So this is all now a package-based, NuGet-based mechanism for pulling in the components you want. And we can do it at a very granular level. We can do it as packages of packages. All right, so you see what other kind of packages get brought in as part of this experience. The other way this manifests itself is through the new project file. Now, rather than that kind of big, crazy XML file that exists today as a Visual Studio ASP.NET project, we have just a simple JSON file that allows you to declare what packages, what things you want to pull into that experience. And we can simply go in, if we wanted to extend this and add new packages, just come in here. And we get full kind of rich editing experience for going and extending the packages that we want as part of our solution. Okay, so that's just a little bit of that experience. But let's go ahead and kind of debug this. And what we'll do is we're going to go and kind of say run without debugging. And this will bring up our simple little Hello World application here. Go into the About page. We see that we've got some text there. Let's go into the controller. If I go into the home controller, you see that I've got some C# code here, right? Let's go ahead and change that. We're going to change that. We're going to save it. I'm going to switch back over to my browser instance here. I'm going to just click refresh. And what we should see is that without an explicit build step, ASP.NET vNext was able to pick up the change to that file and dynamically recompile it and show the latest version to the user. To give you another way of visualizing that, let's go over here. Let's right-click on our project. Let's open in File Explorer. Where do we put stuff today? Where do we build things into? Bin, right? So let's go look into bin, and you see it's empty. The reason it's empty is because the next version of ASP.NET is using the Roslyn .NET compiler and doing in-memory compilation and then storing that binary in memory. Turns out it takes a lot of time to write a binary to disk. Why do we need to do that, right? We can just hold it in memory and keep that really iterative experience going there. Of course, you can still do explicit build steps. You can do explicit compilation steps as part of your delivery flow if you want. But this is really giving you a richer interactive experience as a developer. You guys don't seem convinced by them. Let's try something. Well, I'm going to do one thing. We're going to go off script again. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Now we're going to learn Windows 10. Let's just go do this. Let's just select this stuff. Actually, let's do it this way. See if we can make it work this way. Can you drop over here? All right. File, save as, documents, Visual Studio, projects. What are we, web application 4? Source, controllers. Come here. Yes, I can. So, no Visual Studio magic there. All right. Another bonus demo for you that you didn't expect. So really what we're thinking about here is thinking about how do we go and enable you to go and build these web-based experiences targeting a cloud-optimized experience, ensuring that you have the choice to do what you need to do. So one of the other things, this is not, you should not think of this as a totally brand new thing, throw away everything you've ever learned about ASP.NET development. No, you can take advantage of a lot of these same capabilities right on the full framework, next version of the full framework. So all the way through, the open sourcing, the modular design, dependency injection, those things. The side-by-side nature. So one of the things that this brings us is true website level side-by-side capabilities. So you can go and deploy a new version of this core framework stack with a website on the same machine as a prior version, and everything's just fine. They're running truly side-by-side in an app local way. So with that, I really hope that kind of what you take away from this, just as a way we're going in the direction we're headed, is that we are continued to be invested in ensuring we're providing the most productive experience for developers building on our platforms, so our Windows and cloud platforms, using our tools, using our frameworks. But at the same time, acknowledging that it is a multi-device, multi-platform, heterogeneous world, and you need the ability to go bring different platforms, different tools, different frameworks into your experience, and we need to ensure that you can seamlessly move through that and still be productive to get your job done. So that's what's motivating us. That's what we're trying to do here. With that, there is a ton of related content this week. As I said, my goal was not to teach you how to do this stuff right now, but to just get you thinking about it and get you a little bit of exposure to some of what folks are going to be talking about the rest of the week. Many different sessions around Azure and .NET development. Jerry mentioned that there's a set of sessions on the Office 365 API set, starting with the developer kickoff right after lunch. Lots of stuff around multi-device development from both the Xamarin side and the Cordova side, as well as a set of sessions that will dive deeper into this next version of ASP.NET. I believe Scott Hunter is doing that later in the week, which I would definitely encourage you to go if you want to learn more about how those things are going. With that, I think we are a couple minutes over. I appreciate you actually all sticking around, and enjoy the rest of your week. Thank you very much.